Final hour overdrive continues. TSN 1050 online, tsn1050.ca, your home smart speaker, now up on TSN 2. Brian Hayes, Carlo Colaiacovo. Carlo doing a double duty shift today. He was on his own show this morning. First up, 6 a.m. to 10 a.m., Monday through Friday, right here on TSN Radio, and now doubling down in the afternoon. But the video's down. You're going old school morning radio.
Yeah, just I don't know audio. What happened here, man.
It's all good.
Sorry. But happy to do the show with you, man. I always invite the opportunity when I get asked because I love being on with you and the boys.
Yeah, it's great to have you on, and this is freaking me out a little bit because it's a solo shot. Like, it's just me up on the camera, and I'm realizing, like, I've been in this room for a year and a half, and I've tried to keep it up to date in terms of the background, but the bookshelf I have behind me is a brutal bookshelf, like 25, 30-year-old bookshelf. I've thrown it together. My kids are always grabbing the football I have. I got a box of Callaway balls behind me, a Dougie Gilmore hat, and generally it's not in the screen, but now it's in there, and I'm realizing it's maybe not quite as up to date as it should be, or, you know, A-plus level in terms of backgrounds, but it's not bad. It got me through a pandemic. I'm working from home. What do you want?
Well,
what do you want out of me? I'm doing my best here.
I'm telling you what, man. You inspired me with the helmet look, because that Green Bay Packers look, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to do my background because this is the new way we're going to do shows and stuff, and I'm going to make sure I put my Buffalo Bills helmet behind me.
Good
so,
man. Good man. Yeah. You got to
have inspiration, buddy. You're an inspiration.
Well, I'm trying to be. I'm trying to be. And Colin Morikawa is an inspiration for any young athlete who's told you can't do something because no one else has done it before. Mm-hmm. This guy shows up at the PGA Championship last year at Harding Park. He had never played in a PGA Championship, and he wins it. Remember that leaderboard and what he did on the Sunday and that shot he hit, that par four, that short par four? He hit like a three wood onto the green, tapped in for a two, and the rest was history. And then he goes to the Open Championship because it was not available to him last year because it was canceled or postponed. Yeah. Shows up at the Open Championship this year, had never played in that tournament, and he wins it for the first time. First guy in history to win two majors in which he was playing them for the first time.
Incredible.
It's an incredible feat. And this guy is a rock star, man. Like, his iron play, he's the best guy on earth when it comes to iron play. Like, he is not a bomb and gouge kind of guy. He's not Bryson. He's not Brooks. He's not DJ. He doesn't hit it a mile off the tee, but he hits it straight. And his irons are as dialed in as anyone I've seen in a long, long time. And he's got ice in his veins, man. When he sniffs out a championship opportunity, he closes or he's real close to it. Real close.
And the thing that impressed me the most is exactly what you just described him as, the closer. You know, him playing in the final grouping on a Sunday, you think as young as he is, first time, he would be the one to buckle under the pressure. But instead, it was Luis Oosthuizen again.
Luis,
you know, you
Oosthuizen.
Talk about back-to-back majors where he's this basically, you know, crippled himself on the Sunday.
Yeah. He chokes it out, man. I mean, that's the only way to describe it is Louis finds a way to buckle on a Sunday at a major in which he's in contention. He's leading the tournament after 36, leading the tournament after 54. We had Brad Faxon on last week. And Brad, I think, is buddies with Louis, so he was trying to dance around it. But I said to him, I fully expect Louis Oosthuizen to be in this tournament, in the hunt, and choke on Sunday. Is that an appropriate description of what's going to happen? And he tried to dance around it and be like, well, I wouldn't go that far. It's exactly how it played out.
What happened?
It's exactly how it played out. And I feel for the guy. He's still making a fortune. He has won a lot throughout his life. He's putting himself in the position where the contention is there, and I assume it will continue. I mean, I think getting into next year's round of majors, Louis Oosthuizen, at least one of the four next year, we'll see Louis Oosthuizen in the lead after the first, second, or third day, or in contention on the Sunday. But he has officially defined himself as the guy who's going to find a way to let it go. And Morikawa didn't start strong yesterday. One point he was over par. Early into the round he was over par, but then he just got it back on the rails. He had three straight birdies to end the front, and the rest was history. And by the back nine, it was over, man. You just knew Morikawa was not – he wasn't going to give it up.
He was hitting every green in regulation. He was giving himself good chances to make birdie on every hole. And Louis was just spraying all over the course. So you kind of had that feel. And, you know, I credit Jordan Spieth and even John Rahm for, you know, making a push in the back nine there where they were draining some birdies, making some eagles too. I mean, John Rahm made an eagle there too. And, you know, he lipped out a couple of birdie putts that could have easily put him in contention, but, you know, it just seemed like Morikawa, it was his day and there was nothing that was going to change it. And, you know, you talk about first time playing in this tournament, it's like he was spoiled because usually this tournament represents weather conditions, right? It's challenging weather conditions. There was none of that at the Open this week.
No, it was like beautiful weather. It was hot. Yeah. Like, I love the spectators. No one cruises around with no shirt on in public like British people.
That British Open.
They're the best. Like the one guy that went viral, he's just cruising around, barrel out.
Gut guy.
Oh, gut guy, shorts, you know, just having a great time. And if it's like 20 and above, shirts are coming off in public, and it's totally accepted, and everyone gets it. And you're right. I mean, it just wasn't there. The elements weren't there. It didn't rain. It wasn't overly windy. But the field is still great.
Yeah.
You know, the field, it's still an Open championship. It's still worth what it's worth. And it was a little bit too little too late for John Rahm. But you mentioned him, and I'm glad you did, because he is always in the top 10.
Yeah.
Like at every major, he's in the top 10. And he's only won one, which he just accomplished at Torrey Pines at the U.S. Open. But every single major, this guy's T10.
Yeah.
Like, and generally, it's the way it played out. Like kind of slow start. Not a great Thursday, you know, decent Friday, okay, pretty good Saturday, and then like 65 on Sunday.
Make a charge on Sunday.
It just makes a charge on Sunday, and it's too little too late. But Rahm is T10. He's a T10 machine at majors. Yeah. It's almost a shock that he only has one, you know. And,
it's
and
true.
Morikawa,
it's true.
Morikawa has started in 8 majors, and he's got 2 of them. Like,
wow.
That's pretty good percentage, man.
It's an impressive stat, and actually Karolnik brought this up to me this morning, and this is maybe a good question we can elaborate on, is over the next decade, considering what Morikawa has just accomplished, 2 in 8 tournaments, who do you project to win the most majors over the next decade?
Well, I mean, if you're including what's already in the bank or starting from now, like starting from scratch
Starting from now.
I would probably put John Rahm at the
Me
top
too.
Of the list.
That's who I picked.
I put Rahm 1. I think Morikawa would probably have to be number 2. I think Justin Thomas will still have more. Let's bring in Chris Solomon. You hear him on the No Laying Up podcast. Great follow on Twitter. These guys are a blast. They do golf unlike anyone else. He's making his debut here on Overdrive. It's great to have him on. Again, Chris Solomon from the No Laying Up podcast. What's happening, Chris?
Brian, Carlo, thank you guys so much for having me on.
Absolutely. Why don't you answer that question? I mean, if we were starting from scratch, so not taking into consideration anything anyone has in the bank, the next, let's say, 5 years, if you had to pick one player that you would put money on to win the most majors between now and that 5-year mark, who would you take?
My answer, I try to think of this right, you know, my answer would have been different probably 6 months ago than it is now, right? Which, you know, these things don't last forever, but if you're asking right now who projects the best, you're spot on with Rahm. I mean, the numbers love this guy more than his results have given us so far, and I know he just won a major 2 majors ago, but his prominence in the game of golf has probably just gone a little unappreciated. Got robbed of a title he would have won going away at the Memorial. He won the Memorial last year. He just won the U.S. Open. And his just strokes game, his proficiency at getting the ball in the hole is so clearly better than everyone else in golf right now. Yet when Dustin Johnson won by 5 last November at the Masters, I would have answered the question, Dustin Johnson. I mean, his game, I would have thought, projected really well, but we've seen him regress. So what I've been putting out in the last 48 hours has been, I've been the guy that nobody likes. This is not fun. This is not a fun thing to do. But pouring cold water over everything of expectations, because, you know, when Spieth won 3 majors before he turned 24, when Rory won 4 majors before he turned 25, I gave those guys 8 and 10 majors respectively. And I think I've finally learned my lesson that it always feels like it's going to last forever, and it almost never does. So just preaching caution when projecting out too many major championships into the future. I've officially become old. I've officially become that guy. But the numbers just say, like, it is just so unlikely to win these things. Just don't take it for granted when a guy goes out and wins one.
No, yeah, I think that is 100% appropriate. Like, we all saw Tiger, and then we want Tiger, so we project Tiger. You know, it's like, well, someone else will eventually do that, and there's never going to be a Tiger, and there's too many other guys who are in the same, you know, ballpark. Like, as much as I look at Rom and the answer I just gave, and you agreed with that, that would obviously be my pick. Mr. Major is Koepka. Like,
yeah.
Koepka, and he's got four already, but he is in every single major as well, and I expect that to continue. I think Justin Thomas has more. He didn't have a great major season, but I think he's got more to give. Bryson clearly is going to be in the conversation. I think Shoffley's going to get one, maybe two. I think Cantlay has the game to get one or two. I think Hovland has the game. Like, there's just so many guys where you look at it, and then you know there's going to be scattered random winners. Mm-hmm. Like, it just, that's the nature of major golf, and it, there's no reason to believe it won't continue for the next 5 years.
Oh, I think you did what we love to do. You gave out more majors than there are. And that's
exactly
why you end up, you know, with these guys that, you know, just seem like they should win more majors than they have. And I mean, honestly, I think you throw Tiger out, and I literally want to do that. I want to throw Tiger out, right? Because he's changed everything, all of our general expectations. Just look at Phil. Six majors is so many majors. We are so familiar with this guy. He's not the first of six majors. I don't think he'll be the last. But, like, does anyone in this era get to six? I think that's a very fair question to ask at this point. It certainly seems like Koepka can get two more. But, like when 2014 passed, you would have – I don't know what you would have had to do. I wouldn't have made any bet that looked like Rory McIlroy would be sitting here in 2021 with four majors. And that's just the reality of it sometimes. You never know when the peak is. And it just – gosh, I miss the old me 4 years ago where I would get super excited and give away as many as you guys are wanting to give away right now. I hate this new me.
Yep, me too. Well, I hate that guy as well. No offense.
Well, you talk about Koepka. I mean, he had a chance to win another one, and you think going into the final round, final pairing up against Phil Mickelson, who was 50 years old, and still couldn't close that one out because Mickelson plays the round of his life and wins, you know, another major with that tournament. So you're right about projecting, these guys to win tournaments. But, you know, even another guy is Jordan Spieth. I mean, think about the year Jordan Spieth has had. He's been in contention in every tournament he's played in, and he hasn't won.
Right. He won the Valero this year, but he has not won the one of the majors this year, which we were kind of hoping he'd, to be fully back, we'd have to see one of those. But I try to think of it in this regard. So, like, one of the Rom pretty much has, I think Rom had maybe, if we look at the probability models, maybe an 8% chance of winning the Open before it started. I always do this. I always picture a basketball court. Where's an 8% shot, huh? Like, where would that be? Is it the opposite free throw line? I don't know what it is. It's not surprising. It wouldn't be surprising if you take Steph Curry and put him back at an 8% shot. And it wouldn't surprise anyone to miss 10 in a row, right? That's 2.5 years of majors. Mm-hmm. And that's the number one player. So, again, golf is just so crazy hard to win one of these things. I look at Louis Oosthuizen, man, and I have no personal connection to the guy, but my heart just breaks for somebody that can beat 99% of the best players in the world like six or seven times and not get a title out of it. It's just got to be so maddening. It's just got to, you know, drive him absolutely up a wall that he hasn't been able to get a trophy out of his last several great major championship appearances.
We're chatting with Chris Solomon from the No Laying Up podcast. Colin Morikawa winning the Open Championship yesterday. That's two in the bank for him. He won the PGA last year at Harding Park and then this past weekend at Royal St. George's at the Open. So there is a difference between, you know, who we project to win in the biggest moments because intangibles can come into play. There are stats that can come into play. History can come into play. But taking all of that out of it at a neutral site golf course for one round where they're all playing at their best, who do you think is the best player in the world right now?
That's Rom. That's definitely for sure Rom. I mean, his opening round, when he shoots 71 in round one, that's the only thing that kept him from winning this golf tournament. I mean, he played, as the golf course got harder, he got better. He is just, the word that came to mind for me, for him was, he's a buoy. Like, you just can't sink him. Like, you could hold a buoy underwater for a little while, but, like, that thing is going to rise to the top. That's just what it felt like as he was just leapfrogging guys on the leaderboard this past week, and it's not even going to be up there among the major, the memorable major championship performances, right? Because he didn't win it. But it, numbers and my gut both check out and say John Rahm's best is the best right now, and it, you know, even at even him at like a B plus is better than I'd say, you know, his B plus game is easily a top 10 player in the world right now, which is kind of scary.
Chris, how much fun are you having watching the rivalry, or at least the troll game, that's been created with Bryson DeChambeau and Brooks Koepka? It's just like, you know, ever since it came out a couple weeks ago how Brooks feels about Bryson, you're seeing other people start to get really annoyed with his antics, and it's almost like Bryson is just putting stuff on a tee for Brooks Koepka to just grill him and live rent-free in his head. I mean, we talk about the incident after round one where he basically went to town on his driver, blaming his driver for his poor round, and you hear, you know, Koepka. I'm surprised actually Koepka didn't play the second round of that tournament with a Cobra driver just to give it to Brooks. But how much fun are you having with this rivalry?
It's been a lot of fun. It's been good for the game of golf overall. I was having fun with pretty much everything other than, you know, Brooks turning, you know, harassing a player on the course, encouraging that, and getting a brand activation involved in that. That was kind of where I was a little nervous about where this thing might go. I'm very in on little clips in post-round interviews, kind of making fun of Bryson and that little back and forth. But it's almost too easy for Brooks. I mean, Bryson gives you so much stuff to just knock out of the park. It honestly was like watching the home. It's like watching the home run derby, right? You're just kind of waiting on the right pitch, and the pitcher's just lobbing graded grenades in there, and you got to be a little bit patient and pick the right one because there's just he gives you something almost every day. It's not a fair fight, but I think it's interesting. I think it might be a little too mainstream now. We might be a little bit. You know, people freaking out a little bit too much at all the little idiosyncrasies and the little rivalry, but it is real. A lot of tour guys would tell you that, you know, they're privately sending messages to Brooks, saying, encouraging it because they would love to be able to say the things that Brooks is able to say. And Brooks just is one of the guys that just doesn't care enough, and he'll give it to you straight. But Bryson, not a popular guy, isn't surprising anyone in there. But yeah, it's definitely been an overall positive.
Well, and the payoff's going to be when they spontaneously pair up on a Sunday at a big tournament, right? Like, that's what you need. At some point, they might just get paired up naturally, I guess, on a Thursday, Friday, although it kind of feels like most tournaments and the USGA and others are going to avoid that because maybe both parties don't want it, or at least DeChambeau doesn't want it. But you can't dictate the pairings if you're both sitting atop the leaderboard. And the payoff there is going to be spectacular, is it not, Chris, when that happens, Bryson Brooks?
It is, but, man, you got to have a lot of things aligned, you know, for that to happen. I think they really could have benefited from pairing these two guys up in a Friday or a Thursday-Friday, right when it was kind of bubbling and popping off, and they just kind of refused to do that. I think capitalizing on that would have been good for the game of golf, but, you know, sitting and waiting for it to happen, you know, it can go years without guys getting paired up together on the weekend if the timing doesn't work out right. So, I don't know. As of now, it's probably a little too late to pair them up in a feature group in you know, Thursday, Friday rounds. And I think we are stuck to wait for it to actually happen. But I would have liked to have just seen them force the action and see what that interaction would have looked like. See who played well. I know a lot of people say, nothing's going to happen. They're not going to fight. It's like, yeah, I know that, but I want to see if Bryson steps up and, you know, shuts him up, beats him by six or something like that. Only interesting things could come out of that, and I think they might have missed their window there.
Yeah, it feels that way anyway. But at some point, I hope they pair, or they will pair. When it happens, I think it'll be exciting, and hopefully the flame is still there in terms of the rivalry or whatever we want to call it. Check out the No Laying Up podcast. He is Chris Solomon. He's a big part of that, and it's been great having him on. Enjoy the rest of the season, FedEx, the Olympics, the whole nine, and we'll do it again down the road. Thank you, Chris.
Thanks for having me on, guys. Take care.
You got it. We should give a shout-out to Mackenzie Hughes, Corey Connors.
And Corey Connors, yeah.
Right? The two of them going over to Tokyo now representing Canada. They got a shot at medal in the way they're playing. Like the two of them have been really, really good. And Mackenzie Hughes, you know, stayed in the hunt. Connors fell off a little bit, but it's becoming routine seeing the Canadian flag atop the leaderboard, like page one at majors. It's happening. And will they break through? We just had the conversation how tough it is. You know, like waiting on a lot of really good players to finally get one. But could they break through? Yes. That's a big difference, right? Like there was a long time in Canadian golf where it was like, no one's breaking through. Like
no,
from,
exactly.
From Mike Weir and about by 07, 08, the window had closed. That might even be a little bit late. And up until basically now, there's been a good 10 or 12 years where you're like, a Canadian's not winning a major.
Yeah.
Like, it's not happening. Don't expect it to happen. Now with these two and the way they're playing, it could happen. Not sure it will, but it could, and it wouldn't be shocking if you've been paying attention.
Well, Mackenzie Hughes, I believe, after day one of the U.S. Open, was the leader.
Mm-hmm. Well, final group on Sunday.
Yeah, and Corey Connors, you know, I think there's two tournaments right now where he's been atop of the leaderboard going into Sunday, and he just hasn't been able to overcome the nerves, and he's played, you know, a pretty poor round on the Sunday. So these are growing pains. You know, these are steps in the right direction that these, you know, Canadian guys are taking. And it's funny, we had Bob Weeks on our show this morning, and he guaranteed that a Canadian will medal in golf at the Olympics.
Is that right?
Yes.
I like it, man. I'll take that. I'll take it. I'm looking for it, and I want it.
Sprinkle a couple of dollars on that and see if Bobby Weeks will have a nice payout for you.
Okay, man. Let's go down that road. Let's see where it goes. Let's see what takes us. Al's brother's coming up with his power rankings, an expansion-related power rankings.
Love it.
You've been through this ringer before. Al's brother brings the heat every single week. So we'll catch up with him. And continue to look ahead to a big one for the Jays tonight down at Buffalo. The Sox are in town. Ross Stripling on the mound for the Jays. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.
And up on that one, the first star, Al Brother.
Le Frère d'Alain, Al's brother. He's a stud. He's a star. And he's stolen Stone Cold's entrance. I mean, Stone Cold can't use that anymore. That is Al's brother's music, and I love it. Quick note here, Alec Manoah has been placed on the IL, 10-day IL, with a right back contusion. So I guess he finally got injured. And Anthony Castro is also on the 10-day IL. So Thomas Hatch coming up. Jonathan Davis has been activated, recalled from AAA. Jays in action down in Buffalo. Their final home games in Buffalo, taking on the Red Sox. They're big ones.
Mm-hmm.
And they hit the road for a while. They're at New York taking on the Mets, a four-game series at Fenway, and they'll be home. Al's brother in studio. Are you planning on getting down to the Dome at some point, Al's brother, and being one of the lucky 15,000 or what?
Oh, I got to. I got to get down there for sure. I don't know if it'll be July 30th. Those tickets will probably be very tough to come by. But certainly at some point through the summer, I'll make sure I get down there. I'm double vax, so I'm good to go.
Good nice. Man. Yeah, good you got to get in there.
Yeah,
be comfortable.
Absolutely.
Do your thing.
I got to ask you, Al's brother.
Yeah,
sorry, Brian. Are you a wrestling fan?
Somewhat lapsed. I'm like a massive – I used to be. When I was a kid, I was all about wrestling. Like,
okay.
John Cena's come up was like my peak wrestling fan.
Oh,
I periodically
so
jump into it.
That's the worst possible time to be a big wrestling fan.
Well,
John Cena's your
yeah,
guy?
No
I
kidding.
Happened to be a 10-year-old at that time. It's based
well,
on
speaking
when I was four.
Speaking of John Cena, because the entrance, your entrance song is epic, by the way, the breaking of the glass of Stone Cold. John Cena made his return to WWE last night. It was all over the sports news.
I did see that. I did see that. Pretty neat. Pretty neat. They keep bringing them back, all the old dudes.
I know.
Which is...
I know.
So you talk about how it's a bad era to be, you know, growing up in, but they keep bringing these guys back, so it could have been that bad.
No, it's bad. I think it says that this era is terrible.
Terrible. Yeah.
It sounds like this era is the worst era of all time. I mean, I don't know enough. I do not track it whatsoever, but I was into it when I was a kid. I was at WrestleMania 6.
Me
I mean,
too, buddy.
The Hulkster taking on the Ultimate Warrior. There's nothing better than that, man. That's as good as it gets. That was my era as a kid. And then, like, when I was a teenager, and we
went to Raw together.
Absolutely. We had buddies that were
all.
Absolutely, we were there. And that was when it was The Rock and Stone Cold and The Undertaker. I mean, that was the era to be a fan. John Cena's return is what's going to get you back into the swing of things, Al's brother.
That's the
it
big
was
pop.
All
that's
over
pop.
ESPN, TSN. It was all over everywhere. It was
I
an epic
that.
Debut or epic return.
Well, what about
John
you,
Cena?
Mullen? Like, Mullen's still a wrestling nerd. I think he still watches, like, every possible event.
It's been pretty bad lately.
Yeah.
I've
that's
fallen
what it sounds
off,
like.
I'll be honest.
It's not yeah, well, you got kids and a wife and a mortgage.
Well, I've been getting my daughter into it. She likes it, but
okay.
It hasn't been good lately. But that's pretty much the worst era to get into it is John Cena.
Yeah, like with all the respect to John Cena and Al's brother, I just can't imagine that being your wrestling hero. Like, yeah. If that's the guy that you just can't get enough of John Cena, it's like, man, you missed out on some really quality eras. But anyway, what are you going to do, Al's brother? So what are we doing this week with the power rankings? We got the expansion draft. We know which players are available, which ones aren't. You're going to break down your top five in terms of the players available for the Seattle Kraken?
Yeah, so we're going to take a look at it. We took away the UFAs because, you know, Gabe Landeskog is technically was left protected as a UFA. Alex Ovechkin, not a lot of people talking about it, but technically he was left unprotected by the Washington Capitals. Right. Don't get the sense that that is going to become a thing. But, you know, for the purposes of doing this, I mean, he would be number one as the best player that was left unprotected. But I decided to leave out the UFAs and go for the guys who are under contract or an RFA.
I think that makes sense. Ovi's going back to Washington.
Absolutely.
Like, everyone knows it. Landeskog is not signing in Seattle. It doesn't sound like it. He could, but it's likely either Colorado. It sounds like St. Louis is kicking tires on him. But I think that's smart. So we're talking guys who are under contract that don't have a choice. If they get picked, they're packing their bags. They're going to Seattle.
Yeah.
Okay, Ellis Brothers. So we're doing a five-pack here?
We got a five-pack ready to go.
Okay, kickstart the party. Who do you have at number five?
I've got Mark Giordano coming in at number five, the defenseman, the captain of the Calgary Flames, which was somewhat surprising that they left him unprotected just because he's the captain. But there's been a lot of rumblings that they're looking to change up the culture in Calgary. And what more can you do than getting rid of your captain, I suppose? And he'd be perfect to bring in and kind of be that role for the Seattle Kraken. And he's still got some game. Like, he could still be a quality defenseman, play well last year in Calgary. So I think Mark Giordano will be a solid pickup for Seattle.
Love that.
I like it, too. I mean, he's our age, Carlo. Like, we know him well. And he's 38 years old. He's not a kid anymore. But he's only got, I believe, 1 year left on the deal, right?
Yeah, 1 year, 6.875.
That makes a lot of sense for me. Like, if I'm Seattle, I'm taking him every day of the week as a guy. It's a 1 year project. If he settles in and he works well for you, maybe you extend him a year or two. You're not looking at a 5 or 7 year deal. He's 38.
No,
he can still play, still skate. Leader, good guy in the room. All the intangibles. I'm surprised he's at five. But let's see who else you have. Who do you have at number four, Al's brother?
Well, I got the Tampa 3 coming in at number four. So that's Killorn, Palat, and Yanni Gourde. I mean, they're all three are real solid players. And I'm somewhat surprised that Tampa went the 4-4-1 route and decided to leave all of them left to be picked at. But they got to lose a couple guys. And for me, Yanni Gourde is probably the best of the bunch, and I think that would sting a little bit if I'm Tampa. And if you're Seattle, you got to be loving bringing in this guy. The way that he came up big in the playoffs, you inject that into your lineup, I think you're happy for the Kraken.
Yeah, I'm with you in terms of the defense, but I think any of them being exposed would be taken for sure.
Absolutely.
Right? Like, you just, you know, like Chernak and Sergachev.
Sergachev, McDonough. Any of those four are getting taken.
They're getting taken. And that's I think they look at their forward group, and I think what they have below the surface, they feel like they might be able to replace. Like, Goudreau's already gone. They've moved him to New York. He's going to likely re-sign there. Blake Coleman, I can't imagine, can come back. Probably he's going to walk. You're going to lose one of those three guys. But I think they look at their goalie, their top four in defense, and they're going to lose one, but they're still going to keep the other. So think about it. They're still going to have six forwards of that caliber.
Well, maybe. They're quite up against the cap. They might have to move on from a couple of these guys.
Yeah.
I know Johnson probably going to end up out the door at some point, whether they...
They're going to have to attach a lot to it.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe there's something in place here. Like, Carlo, I know you were saying it earlier. Perhaps there's a deal in place. They still have their first rounder next year that they could attach and say, hey, take Johnson and we'll give you a first. Or maybe it's take Johnson and we'll give you one of these other three guys or a prospect. And then they could maybe dangle out one of those three players that they're probably going to have to get that contract off the books regardless, but get an asset back for it. But I mean, it's going to be interesting what happens there with Tampa and Seattle.
Yeah.
Hey, look, if there's one thing,
man,
if there's one thing that we can definitely give Tampa credit for, is they're not scared to move first round picks if it means makes their team better. And clearly the guy they want taken is Tyler Johnson. So, I mean, he's been put on waivers twice this year. They tried to move him in the offseason last year. He's the guy they're going to try to get Seattle to take. And I think any of those three guys would be a good selection. I mean, Palat, too. He was second in their team in scoring.
Oh, yeah.
This is a guy that's a top-line winger.
Like, yeah. I'm not sure. I don't know who's going to get picked of those three. Yeah. Like, I could make a strong case for all. Like, Killorn had a great year. Mm-hmm. Like, he's, you know, Gord's more versatile. He can play in the middle of the ice. He's had some great years. Like, a few years ago before he signed, he had a 60-plus point season. I could see a scenario where Seattle takes one of the three and then works out a deal for Johnson as well. Mm-hmm. But it's not included as their expansion pick. Like, we're going to take a good player here that we want. Then we'll take Johnson, who can still play. Like, Tyler Johnson can still play.
Yeah.
But you're going to have to pay for that on top of it, like picks and et cetera. So I could see Seattle coming out pretty nicely when it comes to their dealings with Tampa. All right, so you got Giordano at 5, the Tampa 3 at 4. This is your top 5 exposed players for the expansion draft. Who do you have at number 3?
Yeah, we're doing a little bit of a cheat again. We're going to go with the Philly forwards. You can flip a coin. JVR or Voracek, which one do you like better? They've both been extremely good players for their entire NHL careers, roughly the same age, roughly similar deals left. JVR's got 2 years at $7 million left on the books. Voracek, 3 at 8.25. So it's a little bit more of a commitment. But you look at JVR, the season that he actually had a career year in terms of points per game, points per 60, had a fantastic season, 43 points through 56 games. And I think that would be a pretty solid top six guy. And only for 2 years, that's not bad. You can assume that at 31, 32 years old, he's probably still going to be a decent player for the next couple of years.
Still a power play threat.
Yeah. You know?
I thought they were trying to find a way to protect him. I mean, those were the reports.
That was the rumors.
Well, the trade, when they moved out Ryan Ellis, didn't that
happen? They brought in Ryan Ellis.
Didn't they move out somebody and it was expected that that was the whole reasoning
Patrick.
For it?
Yeah, Patrick. And then he got flipped
Philip
for Cody
Myers.
Glass.
Yeah.
And Phil Myers on the back. Yeah, that was my expectation. That's when I saw him, you know, not being protected. Right. I was surprised by that.
Right, but so they moved out Nolan Patrick, who needed to be protected, and the assumption was, okay, now they can protect JVR, but they protected, was it Nicholas O'Bell? I can't remember his name.
Nick O'Bell.
Yeah, they protected him instead, which was a big shock, but maybe they're hoping that one of those two big forwards with two big cap picks gets taken off the books.
That's what I think's happening here, is that it's the flat cap. And teams are like, we don't want to lose the player, but we're fine with losing the contract. You know, and that, I think, is what's happening. Would we prefer to keep Voracek and JVR in terms of wins and losses? Yes. In terms of our cap, we can accept them walking out the door. That's probably the reasoning. And that would, I mean, maybe Seattle doesn't even take one of those two guys because of what we've mentioned here. With the cap and the age, they may not. All right, you got the Philly forwards at 3. Who do you have at number 2?
Vladimir Tarasenko coming in at number 2. His last 5 years, up until the last two seasons where it's been injury-riddled, 30 goals in 5 straight years. So, I mean, this guy can put the puck in the net. He's still relatively at a decent age in his prime at 29 years old. Just 2 years left at $7.5 million cap. And although he's only been limited to 32 points over the last 2 years, including a couple playoff series, he has 26 points in those 32 games. So even though he's been hurt, he's come back and he's still been productive. So I think there's still some tread on the tires of a guy like Tarasenko. He comes in, he's automatically your big-time threat for Seattle. Plus, I did hear over the weekend there were some rumblings that there were teams interested in Tarasenko, even at that full cap hit. So you could even try and flip him at some point and use him as an asset as well.
Something funky happened in St. Louis, man. Like, he doesn't like them and they don't like him.
Yeah, I don't know how it soured so quickly, but
it did, man. Like, the fact that they didn't even, they're like, go ahead, walk for free.
Yeah,
you know, like, see you later, just get out of here. Hopefully Seattle, it feels like they want Seattle to take him, and kind of, I would assume Tarasenko was fine with it because he wants out of St. Louis. But I don't know what to make of him, because his shoulder injuries have been so, you know, bad, and it's been such a downward spiral. This is not a guy who's known to be a pillar of, you know, health either. Mr. In Shape. This is a big boy, bulky dude. You rattled off his stats, man. 4 or 5 years in a row, he was a stud. Consistent 30-goal stud. But I don't know what you're getting out of him over 82 games.
Look, if I'm Ron Francis, this is a pick I'm making, because you're getting a bona fide 30-goal scorer, and yes, there are injury concerns. Yes, there are conditioning concerns. But this is a guy that's obviously declared that he wants out. So he's embracing a fresh start somewhere. Why not embrace a fresh start with a new organization where he knows he's going to be the guy there. And you put him in a situation where he can be the guy, played with this guy's a difference maker. And the beauty about this contract is it's only 2 years.
Yeah.
So the risk is worth the reward for him because of what you could potentially get. And if you're St. Louis, look, this is protection against St. Louis losing Vince Dunn. I know the guy that they don't want to lose for absolutely nothing. But, you know, the Tarasenko, from what I heard, return was not that impressive right now. And if he doesn't get claimed, maybe this is something they can address afterwards. But just as good as an asset is of a draft pick, clearing $7.5 million in cap space is just as important this year for any team.
Absolutely.
People are finally coming around. Like, you know, the NHL community, it took forever. This idea that losing an asset, it's not just about what they do on the ice. You know, you always hear, you can't lose them for free. Yeah, you can't because it's not for free. It's cap space.
It's cap space. Yes.
You know, not losing them for free. That's been the NFL mantra forever, man.
Absolutely.
We'll be doing this in a month. Wow, that guy got cut? Yeah, he got cut because look at the number. Like, that's why he got cut. Yeah, he's a big name. He's a good player. And he still probably got some game left. But his number did not work for us anymore. So we had to move on. Weaponizing cap space.
I think it's also, you look at kind of last year what happened, a lot of these teams, or a couple of years ago with Vegas, they ended up losing multiple pieces because they didn't want to lose players, so they traded away, you know, the Tarasenkos, right? They traded away the Marchessos and the Riley Smiths and the Alex Tucks. They made those deals because they didn't want to lose them for free, where now they're looking like, look, we're going to lose someone anyway. So instead of, you know, trading away Tarasenko, bringing in maybe a draft pick, and then also losing and having to expose Vince Dunn, now they've lost two pieces on our team instead of just sitting there, standing pat, and only losing one.
I like it.
Yep.
I like it. All right, Al's brother, I feel like I know who's going to be at number one. If he's not, we're calling Noodles immediately. And you're going to have to explain yourself. Who do you have at number one in terms of the players left exposed for Seattle to take?
It's Carey Price. This is a massive gamble and roll the dice of Mark Bergevin. I was listening when Johnny called in, and you know he doesn't think that Seattle should do it or that Seattle probably will not do it. And it would definitely be a massive gamble if they did, especially if this injury is going to be as significant as is being reported. He could miss some time next year. And then what are you going to get out of Carey Price when he comes back? And at $10.5 million for the next 5 years, he's already up in his mid-30s. I mean, cap space is the biggest, most valuable thing that this team has. Do you waste it on a goalie who is coming off an injury and is aging and can really, is he going to give you that type of play? He hasn't done it in years outside of this last playoff run.
During the regular season, he has not. I mean, the last couple of years, he has really, his stats indicate, he has not played well. Like, he has really not been much of a regular season goalie. He's still got game. He can still give you something. If you make it to the promised land, the playoffs, I still believe in Carey Price. I mean, he just proved that for 2 months. But I wouldn't go down this road because I don't think the marketing is what should drive you. You know, it has to be the player. It has to make sense economically. You have to have a plan in place. Carlo, you brought up a good point. Vegas better not be messing with their heads in Seattle. Because the chances of finding that unicorn twice in 5 years, very slim. Like, you better be thinking, okay, we got to walk, or we crawl, then we walk, then we sprint. And Price would indicate you're almost skipping a step. Now, you got to do your due diligence, and they are, and they should be. I'm sure they were shocked he was available, and he's Carey Price. He's still a very good goalie. But 10.5, mid-30s, 5 years left on the deal, hip injuries, knee injuries, I just think it's too much of a gamble, and it can really put you in a bad spot. I don't think it makes sense for Seattle.
Don't get me wrong. I would love to see it happen just for the content.
Yep.
I
mean, same. You know, same.
We're in the content business. It'd be a great story. Seattle acquires Price. Okay, how does Mark Bergevin react? I think Mark Bergevin, like Mike Johnson said, would it embrace the Carey Price moving on? Because now he's got $10.5 million in cap space, and he's got a number one goalie he can lean on right now. So it could be a win-win for both situations, but I if you're starting an expansion team, this would be a horrible move to start with.
Well, could you imagine a week and a half ago, the Habs are in the playoffs, and a week and a half later, Carey Price is gone and Shea Weber is maybe, retired.
Yeah.
So your team is depleted. You were not nearly as good as you were. Weber is still a stud on the back end. Price was your superstar throughout the playoffs. You have taken a step back, maybe a major step back, in terms of winning tonight. But you're not playing tonight. You're not playing until October. But you've opened up, what, $19 million in cap space?
Unbelievable.
Like, it just it opens the door up for you to call up Columbus and go after Seth Jones, which I said on Friday I thought they should be doing. Maybe you call up Buffalo, ask about Eichel, you know.
Or Carolina and ask about Dougie Hamilton.
Right.
Right?
Exactly.
The good problem is that there are solutions out there right now to fix these problems that Montreal is having with Shea Weber, who's probably not going to play again, and who knows what's going to happen with Carey Price if he comes back. But Johnny brought up a good point. The fact that Carey Price wages no trade clause makes you think that he's accepting, or at least he's embracing, an opportunity of change.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course.
I mean, West Coast guy, right? Like, he's got ties to that area. Like, his wife is from the state of Washington. He played in the WHL. He's from BC. I think he summers in Kelowna. Like, he's got ties out west, and I'm sure moving out west may be something that he wouldn't mind doing. So I'm not as surprised, and I don't know if I would berate him and be like, why did you expose yourself? Why did you wave? Does it mean you don't want to be here? I don't know if I look at that necessarily as something he has to answer to come training camp, though.
Well, yeah, I mean, he'll dance around. I mean, Carey's not going to give you a lot of depth answers anyway. You know, like, that's another thing that comparisons keep coming up with Marc-Andre Fleury. We talked about this earlier. They are very different people, very, very different approaches. I mean, Fleury wanted Vegas. He wanted out of Pittsburgh. He wanted Vegas. He had less of a cap hit, less term, big personality, embraced it all. I don't know how Price, you know, handles being the face of Seattle. He's been the face of Montreal, but hockey pushes Montreal. You know, that's a hockey town. It's not a personality-driven town. Seattle, I don't know what that is going to mean in terms of you're our marketing ploy now.
Is there one guy who you think could be a marketing ploy? I have a name in mind. I'm curious if you guys have one. That's been exposed and available and out there that you could use as your marketing guy, have him come in on Wednesday and kind of like MC the thing, be a big-time guy.
Who do you have, Al's brother?
Hold on. Gabriel Landeskog?
P.K. Subban.
P.K. Subban.
He's got 1 year left on his deal. Just 1 year left on that deal. That might be worth it to get the jerseys printed, to get the butts in the seats, and to have a guy there who could talk, and that a lot of that market will know by name, especially since he's been doing those ESPN things.
He's a big name. PK is a big personality, and you know, he's not much of a player anymore. That's the problem. And his cap hit's what, $9 million?
But one year. That's
it. But it's a 1 year deal. I mean, they might be able to deal with that $9 million. I mean, it's an interesting thought. Like, and he can still play. Like, he's not a $9 million player, but he can still play.
He can still play 20-22 minutes a game. It's not like he needs to be sheltered in a third pair role or anything.
Yeah, that might be your guy right there.
That's nice, a little very nugget you throw thought out there.
Yeah. Al's brother just bringing the heat like he always
hot
does.
Hot takes from Al's brother,
the John Cena super fan.
With the dab.
Give us the John Cena, Al's brother.
You can't see me.
You can't see me. Yeah, I can. You're right there, John Cena. All right, Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. Lots of love coming in for Al's brother after those power rankings. It's going to be a fun week, man. We got Seattle.
As they should.
They always should. The question is, are we going to do this again in the next 10 years? Do you think we'll expand, the NHL will expand either 33 or 34 teams in the next decade?
I don't. I think 32 is a comfortable number. He's 16 on both sides. I hope they adopt a play-in series because I want to see more teams qualify to make the playoffs. I mean, to have 16 teams every year not make the playoffs, I'm not in favor of that in baseball either. I mean, I would rather watch more playoff baseball than more regular season baseball. So if they can find a way to come to a happy medium, I love what the NBA has adopted with that play-in series. You find more competitive balance and you allow your more teams to stay in it longer. And, I can't see it happening. But if it does, great. Great on the game. If they can find a way.
I guess it depends on where you're going. Like, Houston always comes up as an option. Quebec City, I just don't get the sense they're itching to go there. I mean,
Kansas City maybe,
but the same thing. Kansas City's been in the running, and they just never pull the trigger on Kansas City. So, I don't know where these other two cities would be coming from. And I would assume they'd be in the States, more than likely. Yeah. Maybe a second team in Toronto, but we bring that up every few years and it goes nowhere. Yeah. So we'll see.
Well, speaking of expansion draft, Andy Strickland, ringside reporter for the St. Louis Blues and Fox Sports Midwest, just tweeted out, told if Seattle drafts Vladimir Tarasenko, it will not be his final destination.
Interesting. The old we'll take him and flip him maneuver. I like it.
Yeah.
All right, buddy. Great seeing you as always. We'll catch you tomorrow morning at 6 a.m.
You got it, buddy. Always a pleasure being out with you.
Always great to have you. There's Carlo Koliakova. You hear him every morning, Monday through Friday on First Up, 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. We are out of here. Enjoy your evenings. Enjoy the games tonight. We're back tomorrow at 4 p.m.
We'll chat then.